And this is part two of Joe Fast's story here at Tom Long's home in Fairbanks, Alaska. And this is Pioneer Igloo 4 recording. And this is January the 11th, 1960. And Harry Hughes recording. And this is Joe Ferris of Fur Man, Alaska. This is the second part of his story.
I remember when prohibition came into Ruby.
Yeah.
Sure, they busted all the barrels out in the
street. Yeah, you were.
Everybody was cashing and hiding in the bottles.
That's just about the time you and that Big Joe and...
Yeah, we're all...
you boys were all about the same age that time.
Yeah, I was about...
Huh? Yes, he was just about the size they were, that
13, it? About 13 years old.
You remember, you probably used to carry the water for me up into the barn.
Just leave it on to turn it off.
I used to pack water for your mule.
Yeah.
That's good.
I used to give you sort of 4 bits to pack up a bunch of water. And then I used to get the rifle and the hay in the
barn.
Isn't that it?
Yeah. Everybody got drunk in Ruby.
Yeah.
Prohibition.
Yeah.
All were growing up.
Oh, they're throwing the booze out over the bank.
Yeah, sure. Smashing it.
They sure had the people scared.
How did you get your supplies? You have to come in town and pack them out?
Who now?
No, when you used to take stuff out to work with.
You mean Holly and Tavor, man? Mm-hmm. Well, I used to wait them out there. When
on the river?
Huh?
On the river in the summer.
In the summer?
On the river?
Well, they used to bring the freight up the tamarack. That's about, the tamarack is about 8 miles from Poor Man. I used to freight it for everybody, mail and everything over the hills there in Poor Man. I done that freighting in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The clay used to bring the mail and all the perishables. And everybody would lay in all the cold storage stuff, you know, they wanted, but like eggs and spud and stuff like that. Bert LeQuay used to bring it up in the mail with a gas boat.
Mm-hmm. And then you packed it with horses?
What? I'll hold it over the wagon.
Under the wagon.
Yeah. But the first plate I taken into Poor Man in 1913, I packed it in the Poor Man with mules. Uh-huh. Got 2 bits a pound for packing it.
2 bits a pound, packed it on pack mules.
On pack mules, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1913. That's when I first built it. That's when I built that cabin that burned up.
Mm-hmm.
I built that cabin the year that I'll tell you about it burning that cabin up. Well, that is the year, yeah, 1913. The stampede was that spring. The old Jack Monahan?
Yeah?
Old Jack Monahan was on that stampede. He died here last spring.
Well, that's 49 years old, that cabin was then.
What?
That cabin was 49 years old.
Yeah.
The cabin that burned up was 49 years old.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I built it that. I had a fellow to help me build it named Bob Focus, and we built it. And I had a barn for 8 mules behind it. But after I left and went to Custer Quim, I sold the cabin, understand, to a store man. He didn't want nobody to get it. To old Henry Cox. Do you remember him?
Who's that?
Henry Cox.
Cox?
Yeah, he's the fellow that had the store. It sold to Harvey, and George Bowmaster, they took it over. George come over and run the store there for Harvey.
Harvey the grocer?
They run the store in Ruby.
Is it a lot now, or?
No, it's a Poor Man. They bought Cox out and moved in there.
Well, Harvey had a place at the Salatna one time.
Yeah, but George Bowmaster left that, and they went over and bought. After that, George went over to Poor Man running for Harvey, and then a little later, Harvey closed up in Ruby, and he come out and he's running when I was close. Because the criminal 22, he was on it himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he don't, old Cox, he, you know, a lot of people used to come down there and stop with me, and natives, I know all of them old trapping natives that was trapping over in the country there, and they used to come and stop overnight with me and everything. And old Cox wanted to get all the business he could, and he thought if he got that barn and cabin, and he'd stop. He'd make a little money by buying it from me.
Mm-hmm.
So I sold it to him. So did, and he tore down the barn and the horse barn, and he tore it down and burned it up for wood. So then Albert Bahanek, he come in there and he built it. Oh.
That's all right.
Albert Bahanek came down there with somebody else before. What was his name? The man with hot springs.
Oh,
he didn't own the outfit
know.
When he came down there.
Oh, yeah.
He
oh,
was
I know.
Driving for it.
He is out here at the hot springs. They left.
Yeah, what was
he
the
left.
Name that guy?
Where? Where is his name?
Where?
And where, yeah.
Yeah. And then Albert bought him out later.
Albert bought him out later on, yeah. But he sent Albert down there with the outfit, and then next summer he come down and...
Yeah, and sold out the outfit.
Yeah.
They used to run buggies out to the creek, you know, with fast horses. They had crackerjack horses.
Yeah.
They had matched teams. They had good horses in the early days, you know.
Well, I was under the impression that most of them rode horseback. I don't know why.
Oh, no, no. Albert Bahanek run a stage out there.
Remember the stage?
You remember the stage?
Huh?
Albert
yeah.
Bahanek.
Yeah, he
run
the stage in the foreman.
Sure,
yeah.
Fast horses, you know.
Yeah. Oh, at that time, when all them people, there was about 500 people were on Pullman. Now there's nothing more around but a bull moose. He got charged the Pullman.
What was a team of horses cost in those days?
Huh?
What was a team worth, a good team?
Oh, they're around, a good team cost around $500,
$600. $600, yeah.
Yeah, about $300 for a horse.
Yeah.
That's a good horse.
$300
a piece, yeah. Cost you about... $500 or $600 for a team
yeah.
in Seattle. And you got to pay the freight in.
Pay the freight on them. And, yeah.
Yeah, Albert.
About $100 a piece for the horses at least, wasn't it?
Huh?
$100 a piece freight? The freight to get them up?
I guess it would, yeah.
Boy, there was a lot of team in the Ruby, I want
to tell you. Oh, when them big boats are coming in from the outside, there's nothing to get horses or freight or anything. And they had that old Lavelle Young and the sir and they had four or five big boats. They had four or five big boats on this Yukon and they shoving about a 300 ton barges.
Mm-hmm.
150 ton on the barges, nothing. Shoving a couple of them ahead. And running here to Tannenau, running up to Tannenau, and then they'd switch to a smaller boat. Now, like the smaller boats would run it up. I mean, about a boat that handle about. He'd have about 150 ton in the same
yeah.
boat.
You remember that horse that got burnt his whole side, you know, from standing
that is,
too close?
That was Frank.
They used to build a smudge for the horses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They had a blanket over them, you know. And the horses, they get wise to that smoke, you know. They'll stand right up into it.
Yeah.
Sure, get right up in it. And the blanket caught fire and he got the whole side burnt, you know.
His name is Frank something. I forget the name.
Frank Whalen, no?
Whalen, yeah.
Whalen,
Whalen.
Yeah.
That happened in there over. He was a freightman on the. He had that horse on the scow, freightman on the Noak River before I went over there with them horses. I traded on that Noak River with horses for 2 years. I had one horse over there that weighed 2,100. And one weighed 1960. Used to pull 14 ton over up the Anoka River on the old bars and everything.
On the ice?
On the water, yeah.
In the water?
Yeah, right on the water, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They used to raise more money in the early days
yeah.
for a 4th of July celebration than Fairbanks has ever raised in the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
For all their 4th of July celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
In those camps. I mean, they donate and come out with dough, the men, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have a celebration. It was a celebration. Tug of wars, sack races, and egg races. Remember the tug of wars?
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in a tug of war. You know, I was a mining on Town Rack at the time they had a tug of war in Foreman there, and Spruce Creek come over to pull Foreman. And they grabbed me for the foreman. The foreman did. And some name was Fred Joyce and Denny Coyle got in an argument. They were going to be the judges, you see. Joyce was going to be the judge of foreman, and Denny was going to be the judge of spruce. That time his mind over there. That's before Denny was married. And this Joyce, he's a teamster. He'd been working real long. And on the Hub Hill, the horse started up when he put the rough log on and caught his foot and pretty broke the arch of his foot, and he's still a cripple from that. But I'd sold my outfit that time too, but Joyce and he was living on Four Men and Freighting from Tamarack over the mountain over the hill. And they got in an argument, and this Benny, he got in an argument, he's too much for Fred, you know, and he knocked Fred over in the willows. And he followed him up. I went up and I grabbed old Denny and I threw him back on his back. And I said, "You want any more?" Denny got up and walked off. That's Denny Corbin. You met him.
I know him, yeah.
I remember one tug of war there in Ruby. My dad was a starter. And that guy called my dad a liar.
I wasn't there at that time. I was in Four Men.
My dad was
then
a
Fourth of July.
He was 225 pounds and he had a pair of shoulders on him like a moose. You know. Big man, powerful man.
Oh, he could pick up
he just lifted that guy one swat. He was a big man too and lifted him right out into the street. What?
This guy told he was a marshal. He told him if he didn't have a badge on, he'd take the button off or something. Yeah. He'd have to save the badge off and knock the Jesus out of him without it. Yeah. He gave him a chance, didn't he? I said he gave him a chance.
He could take a 200-pound man sitting on a chair and put him up on a saloon bar with one arm. Yeah.
How come he wasn't good wrestler? Never followed that. There used to be some wrestlers and boxers here in the early days.
That winter, 10 and 11, they got out of grub and hungry, I think, is what made them more crazy than anything. Went down there with a little money, but they opened up a lot of saloons there, and there's about 40 women went in there, sporting women, and all kinds of saloons opened up, and they spent their money and went broke. Some of them went out and prospected and got broke and come back in, but they took 7 out of there that spring. Even the marshal that they helped, Peter McMullen, you heard of Peter McMullen?
I heard his name.
Yeah, Peter McMullen. He was the marshal there at that time, and he's one of the marshals down there at that time. And his brother went crazy. He was watching this bunch of crazy ones. He was a guard over them at the jail, Pete's brother. And he went crazy. And then Pete had to take him out. He took his brother out crazy. And on the way out, once in a while, I guess he'd kind of come to himself. On his way out, old Peter was driving him on a dog team, and Peter had him in the dog. He was in the dog sled, and old Peter was on the handlebars, you see. And he says, "Pete thinks I'm crazy, but he's crazy." That's what they told on him anyway. I don't know. "Pete thinks I'm crazy, but he's crazy." That your father was in that bunch of hauling them out that time. I guess he helped haul that bunch. They took 7 out of there, and he could only take care of one. You know, one man, each man has got a prison.
Didn't watch mine before he been
hit. Well, this used to be a rough country to live in because some people didn't have the instinct or the nature to live in the solitude and make for themselves. Mm-hmm. They lived too long around civilization and they depended on somebody else.
Yeah.
But when you used to get here, when I first come in the country, you depend on yourself and nobody else.
Yeah. Well, that's the way I've always been.
Yeah, that's right. So these new people don't know what that's about.
Yeah. Yeah, I was born a hillbilly and I guess I'll die one.
Huh? The trail and the weather or nothing stops you. You win.
But they don't prepare for it now. If any kind of a disaster comes here now, there's hundreds and hundreds of them will die.
Yeah, I guess so.
What the hell to do in the first place?
Well, you can see what I done.
No, they don't have any idea.
You see what I done? I fought that fire, and then I went down there and saved my hands. And
you know, self-preservation, but the new ones don't know that.
Just like that sister over here, when I had a 5-inch crack in my hand, you know. Let's see that happen about 44 or 54. The dog team run away with me and threw me off down a hill. I went about 30 feet. This dog team was after a fox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fox jumped up on the trail and there's only very little snow. And the fox went off through the woods. This dog team, he went down in the woods. The leader, he followed the fox.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they went in over the bank, you know, I should have quit the sled and let them win. But I didn't want to let them loose.
Mm-hmm.
It was the second time I hooked them up that fall. And I went down about 30 feet and I landed on a rock. I put a crack in my head about that long. I was 7 weeks over in the hospital. That's the first time I ever looked for, I was 76 years old, I guess, that time. And that's the first time I looked for a doctor or a pill.
Yeah. You were lucky all those years.
What?
You were lucky.
That's the first time I ever looked for a doctor or a hospital. And like that, this, one of them old sisters over there, she come and sit down on the bunk the next day and asked me what my religion was. I says, my religion is nature. That's my religion. Well, she says, if that's your religion, that's your God, she says.
Mm-hmm.
She walked off. So she got up.
Well, the sisters have been pretty good over at the hospital as a rule, you know. They've been pretty good to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, she says, well, I had no religion. I guess it's nature, ain't it? When you ain't got no religion?
You believe in what God made.
What?
You believe in what God put here.
Yeah. You're no hypocrite, then?
Nope.
Any man that has his own religion, I think he's all right in this world, too. I don't think you have to be religious to go to the church every Sunday and have something heart back to every Sunday.
You're wrong when you do that.
Well, yeah. If it's so fishy or something, well, why have a heart back to every Sunday?
Same thing over and over and over.
The same old thing over and over and over and over and over. I don't go for that simple reason. I don't go to church.
No, when you get out like you do and live out in the wilderness the way God made it, mm-hmm. that's as near God as you can get.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
I believe it myself.
There's no preacher can put you there any closer.
Maybe that's the reason the devil, he don't want me. Or he took me there when I went through that, got out, going out of that cabin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hottest place I've got here in New York. It failed any hotter than it was there for a second, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have been over a second to get out of that cabin when I wake up and see it all in blazing. That paper was running all over the when I opened the door to go out through the cabin, get out of the cabin, the blaze went right out after me.
Followed
me right out through the hill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the draft, I guess.
The heat was expanding.
Yeah, I had to. I don't know what would have happened if that, I might have been smothered, but I had a big ventilator and the cabin was off warm and I kept that open. After I'd come in the evening from trapping, I'd always leave that open and let all the fire and everything get out. I just leave it open. And if I'd have had that closed, I don't know, I don't think, I might not have never waked up, you know.
Yeah,
I might have smothered
mm-hmm.
from that smoke, but the smoke went through that, you know, a lot of it. That ventilator will draw it out.
Mm-hmm.
The real smoke, the cabin. I was back in the back end of this house, in asleep, and the cook stove was there, and the doors are just about where that is.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go through two doors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just as soon as I hit that door, I jerked it open, and I went through the other, and I had to go through another door, my cash door.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got outside, I threw myself down in the. I threw myself down in the snow and I put that out. If I'd had cotton underclothes on, I think I'd have got burnt to death. But I had the woolen underclothes and I just burnt that side. It was the only thing that the fire helped, you know. But it went out. Yeah, I put it out.
Well, that's your closest call in all the years you've been here then.
Huh?
That's the closest call you ever had.
Yeah.
In all these years.
Yeah. That's the closest call, yeah. That's about it. Well, I wouldn't last another minute, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I know. I never would have had another. That's the closest call I ever had. That's close enough.
Well, if you had to start across country like you used to do, how did you provide for yourself when you took off with your team? What did you take with you in the way of equipment? What did you carry? Like a knife or gun or axe or what did you take when you went?
I kept a gun with me and always had a small axe.
Mm-hmm.
That I could put on the saddle. I had a cover for it, put in the pack. Yeah, you mean when they were packing through the hills?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always had a wet axe and built a fire.
You ever put snowshoes on horses, Joe?
What?
You ever put snowshoes on horses?
I had snowshoes on horses around the Costa Quim, even logs with them.
Yeah.
Full logs out of the woods with them up in the head of the Costa Quim. Yeah. John Peterson and them. Yeah, I snowshoed a horse at Al Gerger. First time I ever met him. I met him with a horse, that big horse, that big white horse. I met him on a dog trail with snowshoes on, and he weighed 2,100.
Well, you got to learn to walk on those,
right?
Horse has to learn how to handle them, too.
Well, you got to put them on and let them practice a while. They get down, and pretty soon, maybe a dozen times before they get next to themselves. But after they get next to themselves, they're just as careful as a man with a snowshoe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But smaller. You know John Walker?
John Walker.
Well, when I went from Ruby that time, I sold that bunch of horses to Bill Jones. Them, I took a bunch of ponies and mules over to Costa Quim. You know, I got two Melbourne. And when I got over to Ophir, somebody named Hot Air Riley, he told Bill Jones, he said, "You better go down and buy that fellow out because he's a bad opposition for you." And this guy came down, he wouldn't know what to take for the layoff. And I told him, I said, "Oh, I don't know, we'll figure it out." And I told him, I'll tell you the layout for, I bought two of them from Albert for $100 and I had two of them on, I had five. And he gave me $250 a piece for the five. I got $1,000 for them and they're double interest. $1,000 cash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To put you out of business.
Huh?
To put you out of business.
Put me out of business, yeah. Yeah, he didn't argue. He said, "We'll go down to Pete Carlson's safe and I'll blow the money out and give it to you."
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had a pretty good. Then he turned around and hired me for to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for him. This is about the time that's the same winter the bear robbery was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I went to work for him and I was going to tell you, Bill Jones sent old John Walker with me one trip. Old John would go ahead and I'd always go ahead with a head horse and kind of watch back, see who was coming all right. And I had to have a man behind you to kind of see that everything was going all right. And old John, the one that was behind, he stumbled and he went off of the mare, the dog trail, and he was laying there with the snowshoes up like that, the old horse couldn't get up. And old John, he had to run about a mile to get me to stop. And I stopped these other horses. They just waited for me. And I went back and helped old John. We took the snowshoes off and let the horse get up. And he got back one there, a buckle of snowshoes on. And there the old horse, he even trotted to catch up with the other horse.
Yeah.
With them snowshoes. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the stores, traders and the NC company both, they used to act as a bank in those days.
That's right, I heard that.
Men used to leave their money with them alone, and then whenever they needed a few bucks, well, they'd go down and get it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know of traders that made money off of the money that they were holding from men, because they'd buy for cash and pay for cash.
Mm-hmm.
With their money, mm-hmm. for their groceries coming into their store.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean?
Yep, that's right.
And get a big discount then by paying for cash. But they wouldn't have the cash if they didn't have the men's money.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'd sell and take in money and they'd have money, you see, to give them money whenever they needed it.
Well, NC Company has had a banking license in the territory for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the traders, I mean, too, you see, you know. Well, boy, I should do it.
I've had a credit for the NC since 1908.
1908?
Huh? I got into them in the dead water there, $6,000.
They never said a word to you either, did they?
Huh?
They never said a word when you're going to pay.
But I had a wood contract that I got $13,446
mm-hmm.
that spring.
Mm-hmm.
The NC, they got about half my money anyway. But Tom Aiken, I had He was a miner. He was a man that made the big money on that Curry Creek out here. Even a haul wood from him here. But when he got down to the Iditarod, he got me to take a contract here. And I took a contract to put in 2,800 cord of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the money that I had coming to me when old Tom, but old Tom, he went good for me, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the NC, they didn't pay no attention to nothing. They went in and get a load of horse feed. I could give an order to somebody that's working for me. He could go in out of the NC and get clothes, anything he wanted. You know, that's the way that I got in so deep.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got paying off everything, I only had about $3,000 left out of that.
Out of your whole year's work?
Out of that, all that money that I had a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
I just quit with about $3,000.
No. Well, did you make these snowshoes for these horses yourself?
Yeah.
You design them and make them yourself?
Yeah.
Well, how did you fasten them on the horse's legs?
Take an inch board and see for a horse around 1,000 pound that size. You'd have to get a little better, 14 inch than big horses. But an inch board, a foot board, you get it like that, and then you have one that way. And one cross. This and the cross, you put a hame string in. These hame strings are coming on for the horses just right.
Mm-hmm.
It buckles right over the toe, and then you bore a hole in the back end for the back cork. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And then you use hay wire for a hook,
mm-hmm.
And you would hook that right up, replacing that, and they just pack it along with a knife and hook that up on there. But this sure hame string, the buckle will be on this side, and then the other end would be here. It works just the same as these airplane belts.
Oh, yeah.
That works up and buckled over the toe.
Over the belt.
Over the toe, right underneath the hair.
Mm-hmm.
You see? That's the way they work. And that's all you just get a 12-inch board, and you got it. You have to cut off 2 feet, and then another 2 feet.
How long did you make them then?
2 feet.
2 feet.
No, one. 1 foot. Foot each way.
Oh, and a foot square.
Square. Right, square.
That's that big pad.
This square. This square.
You're walking on board.
Mm-hmm.
Walk in it.
Well, did you make your own snowshoes, or did the natives make them up for you?
No, I made my own.
You made your own?
The natives, they didn't bother about that. They don't know nothing about that.
You kept some birch and brush.
I seen that. I seen them doing that in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I seen them that when I was a kid there, back there, a young fella.
Mm-hmm.
I seen them when they're packing into that Tundra Mountain country. You remember the time they had a big stampede before I come in. It was about the time I was in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
I seen the way they had them there, and I remember that too. Mm-hmm. That's the way they snowshoed in the mountains in Montana and Idaho in them days. They use them famous snowshoes. They make a good trail. And they don't, after up there in the head to cut the rim on the Nixon Fork, one of the whole yard in them roads after they walked through the snow a little while, hit us down through the horse, and take them off. Take them off. It's not going to ever need them off.
Mm-hmm.
Just shove the snow down, you know, where it wouldn't be too deep
for
boys.
Well, after heavy snow, you'd get out and beat your own trail down, so you could go over it without your snowshoes later.
Huh?
You'd beat your own trail down after a big heavy snow. You'd go out with the snowshoes and make a trail?
For the horses? No, they make their own.
Mm-hmm. But then you did the same for yourself.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
well, when I used to pull a sled over in near McKinley Park there,
uh-huh.
Every night of the snow, I'd get out in the morning with those big snowshoes and beat a trail clear across the creek to where I wanted to go.
Uh-huh.
And then a couple of days, that was packed solid and I could walk on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That happened regular up there.
Well, that's good either way you do on a trap line out here. But I go off enough of the dogs, I let them use a snowshoe. Make them look. I got a sled and I got a toboggan bottom on it. And the sled ain't that much further than that from the ground. Well, after you get over it once, and run over it a few times, it gets so hard, and you build up a tree like that, and when the snow comes, it blows over it. Mm-hmm. The open place, it blows over. Mm-hmm. Notice, huh? Mm-hmm. You use a toboggan bottom, or a toboggan is the best thing to trap with. Mm-hmm. When you make one trip, you've got to lose. Hey, you know that.
Well, I tried skis once. I went and got myself a pair of 8'6" skis, those great big long ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I fooled around 2 weeks with them, and I pretty near broke my neck. So I got rid of the skis and got back on snowshoes.
Yeah. Well,
I fell so darn hard, and those skis will trip you.
I used to be good on the skis ahead of a dog team. Mm-hmm. I come from one time I left Ophir with 11 dogs, and I was on the skis and only a bundle of fish on the sled.
Yeah.
And tell about them dogs. I had them three little shepherds of, Joe Madison, had them on the lead of these other eight. Had eight big Malamutes and then them three little fellows on the lead. I took this Ted Roberts over there when I bought that homestead. And I was on the way back. You remember I told you about Ted Roberts? So, on my way back, I just got a bundle of fish in Ophir and throwed in there. Just had to stop. I just stopped once. All the way to... I stopped at Cripple. And I don't think I was on 6 or 7 hours making that 48 miles. 49 miles. And then next day, I had about the same... Say it was 40-some miles to poor man from Cripple. I made it in 2 days easy. And I made it in about 15 hours, the whole trip, 100 miles. So you know the dogs are going. I was on the skis alone, ahead of the dogs. So that, I was pretty good on the skis.
You was making better time than some of the dog races today then.
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but I was on the skis ahead of the, nothing on the sled, only the bundle of fish. And the dogs, they're all good. Eight good Malamutes, and these other little fellas, they hurried them Malamutes along, I'll tell you.
Kept them going, huh?
They kept them coming. They were fast little dogs, weren't they?
Yeah, shepherds were willing to shoot.
Yeah. I wouldn't have made that time if I hadn't had them on the lead. And I took Tom Zacklin and got Teddy over that time. Right?
They'll give everything they've got, half a shepherd.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're strong hearts. Soul of Mary's setter. But their feet are no good for trail saddle. That's the only trouble with them.
Well, didn't they used to put boots on them?
Yeah, you mock them, but that's a lot of trouble, to mock from your dog all the time. Yeah, made out of candy.
Because I've seen their feet bleeding.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the spring of the year, where you have to mock them. In the spring of the year, you travel at night on the truck. You can't travel in the daytime because the snow softens up and it breaks through, sled storms and all.
No, towards spring, you've got to lay for
there. Travel on the truck. That cuts the dog's feet. So you always carry moccasins. Some dogs' feet will never cut.
Yeah.
I've had dogs that never did get sore footed. Other dogs would have had good feet. But when it trail travel, but they'd always cut and swing.
What was your best year trapping for skin, for fur?
I don't know what year it was.
When you trapped, did you trap for all kinds of fur?
Well, 1928 was good trapping. 1928, big price for fur and lots of fur in 1928.
Well, I wasn't trapping then.
No,
I never done no trapping after.
Yeah,
I went over there. Well, I just set out a few traps down there when there's cutting wood like that, But only catch 3 or 4 marten, maybe a fox, But
Henry Hill.
But when I started to trap, studied that as after I started working with this. They got me to cut wood and trap a little and cut wood. Yeah. I got started pretty studying the trap then.
Remember when Henry Hillman made his money was in 27 and 28, around in there. And
he made about,
big price for
food. He made about $3,500 one winter.
Yeah, made more than that.
Didn't he? Only had two dogs, too.
Yeah, he used to track the dogs.
Oh, I never made it. I'm not what you call a real trapper. I just picked that up after the mess of riches. Well, I did it. Years ago, when there's lots of, if I knew about as much about trapping as I do now, the way fur was and everything, I'd have been, I could have made $100 where I was making $10 a horse. I could have made more money if I knew how to trap like I do now, but I didn't bother about 7 days. I let the natives and other white men do that. I never made no practice. Up till Well, we've been on the, after the war, after this last war, I started a trap study. But my best year would be one year I got 400 and something from a beaver, and I think I got about 50 martin that year. I don't know the average. They're about $16 a piece that year. So you can see about that was my best year. I trap over there a little in the winter, and I'm looking after the Mesovich's ditch in the summer, and I trap a little and raise a garden, just get along, just to keep myself busy, you know, more than anything.
What? How early in the spring did you plant, and what did you plant in your garden?
Plant? Mm-hmm. Oh, I planted, I had about 1,000 pounds of spuds burn up over it. Yeah, and about 500 pounds of carrots and rutabagas, I guess about 200 of carrots I had, and I've had about, well, I had a whole one of them 50-gallon tanks of, I had 6 tanks underneath the floor in that cabin, you see, and I put all my, I had my, all my perishable stuff in them tanks, there's 6 of them, I had them full of, you know, groceries, like canned goods and stuff, had 2 full of that.
You ever have the bear break in and wreck everything in your cabin?
Not there. I killed 5 bears. Some of them I started coming around trying to get into the mess that you left, and I killed 2 this summer. I killed a bear this summer over in a over there at a lake, and this was about, you know that Boulder Lake was?
Mm-hmm.
You know where that lake is out this going into town, you know, where they used to go down and get the ice. Boulder used to get his ice. You know where that was? Well, I killed a bear down there, and I went back in the next day, and there's another bear. He put his head and eat up.
Eating on him.
One bear he killed enough. Mm-hmm. He's that hungry. And I killed another one right close. The works are just when that, you remember when that hard rain comes just before the freeze up?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I shut him there, and the cut was so much water I couldn't go over to him. And that night, 4 wolves come along and eat him up. Yeah. They didn't leave nothing, hardly. The next day, all was left was 4 claws and the backbone.
Cleaned him out, huh?
Yeah, them wolves eat it all, yeah.
You know what's hard for me to imagine sometimes?
Huh?
You know what's hard for me to imagine sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Is that Long Creek and Ruby, a poor man, are extinct.
Yeah.
They're desolate, dead.
Nothing there anymore.
Not one inhabitant. Mm-hmm. No, except Joe, a poor man. Yeah.
Well, didn't
Iditarod is extinct.
Well, didn't Miskovich? Gus Utila work over in there near you too for a while? Gus Utila?
No, he worked over in there.
Well, how about Patty Savage?
Oh, there.
Patty worked on Long.
He worked along a while, but Gus Utila, he was on Cripple country. Cripple in Port Ophir. That's his country.
Yes.
He was trying to get a hold of that property at the when the man Smith was selling out to them at Mesovich. He tried to get a hold of it that time, but they hid them all. I guess they had more ready cash to put up.
Did you know Bob McKenna and Theo McKenna?
Bob who?
McKenna. Mickey McKenna. They used to call him Mickey. Bob.
He used to have the Golden Heart taxi cab here at one time. He had the Golden Heart taxi cab down there at the stand at the Nordale Hotel.
Oh,
you must know him. Take a look at the picture.
This lady.
You know them? They're old timers.
This is Phil McKenna.
Oh.
And that is Mari Ferry. Her name is Ferry. She lives at Ketchikan.
Oh.
That's taken as steward at the Grand Finers Grand Igloo Convention.
Oh.
She passed away. We're going to bury her tomorrow. We have a funeral tomorrow.
Oh, you mean the...
This one.
Oh. Oh, he's going to be buried tomorrow?
That's Mrs. McKenna. She's going to be buried. Yeah, she don't have much hair on her head.
Oh. Well, that... Ruby...
Clark from Nenana.
What?
Fred Clark's wife.
Yeah, I know. She was not Mad Kelly. They had a store down. Well, old Kelly, he was around. He went into 1912. He went to Rubin. They stayed after the World War One was over. They left one out. You remember?
She was a girl.
That's one of the
Kelly's daughters. Old Ed Kelly.
You look at, here's another picture. This is taken in Dawson City.
All right.
There's the old beer cart. They used to haul the beer from the brewery in Dawson.
1904 and 5.
That right behind them. This brewery right here in town come from Dawson. They hauled it down here from Dawson on the barges.
I know old Ed Kelly. When I come here to Fairbanks in 1905, winter 5 and 6, he was a policeman here.
Yeah?
Her father, yeah.
Yeah.
He was a policeman here that time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was on the police force here. Old Ed Kelly, yeah.
Now you can take a look at all of them.
Yeah.
Now this is taken over in Dawson City at Robert W. Service Cabin in Dawson City.
Uh-huh.
And that's Andrew Wicken. And this is Katie McLennan.
Oh.
And that's Theo McKenna.
Oh.
This is the sister to that other girl, that other lady.
Oh, I see.
We took those this summer.
Oh, I see.
Some night, Tom and his wife coming over, and I'm going to run all the slides. I've got lots of color slides.
The three of them Kelly girls, one to call Rosie, and then one Mabel. The three of them, Mabel was the one that's married to Philip Niederrod, George Phillips. Mm-hmm. Remember? George Phillips married one of them. George Phillips.
Do you know this man here, Mike Benich? Right here, Mike Benich from Dawson?
I don't know.
He's a friend of John Hajdukovic.
Yeah.
And he hadn't seen John for 50 years.
Yeah.
Well, that's Bill McKenna over in Dawson with Mike. We went to that pioneers meeting over there.
I guess old Kelly, you've been dead for years, the old man, mm-hmm. Old Ed.
And here's one taken at Seward with all the ladies when we had the grand convention.
I see.
You want to look at him, Tom? Mm-hmm.
Sealed out. Well, I'd say that my dad and first knew Joe in 1912. Ruby was struck in 11. My dad came to Ruby in 1912.
Yeah.
My mother and my brother and I came to Ruby in 1915, 3 years later. And I was just a boy. And I knew all the Teamsters, that's the sense. Joe was one of them. Yeah. There was Joe and Joe Ferris. And Dalby, you remember Dalby?
Yeah. He went down on the
Sophia. On the Sophia, yeah. Taxtons and Dalby and the whole Taxton family went down on the Sophia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At 13, from the Ruby cast, four men along in Ruby, 13 went down on that. 13 went down with that Salah, he went down.
When we came to Ruby, my dad had a team, I'd say, of about 21 dogs.
Yeah.
He kept regular, you know. And so us kids, in the wintertime, my brother was 3.5 years older than I was, you know. Why, although I was young, why he was older, why we'd hitch up 8, 9 dogs, 11 dogs, and go out to Long Creek and poor man when we were just kids, you know. And so we knew all the people out on the creek.
Well, you remember that Major when he went crazy over there?
Yeah, Major,
I brought him in. It's Long, and I was getting along so nice, but he kind of got funny around Long that time. And when it got to 14, I had Miss Ruth come and take him.
Mm-hmm.
I had him with my team. I had him driving the team in, you know. Well, he was crazy, though. Mm-hmm. You know, Major.
Major,
and your daddy
came
out and took him in. And, you know, your daddy, the way he got him, I told him not just to ask him if he wanted your daddy coming. He said, I told him, tell him you're just exercising your dogs. So he says, well, Major, do you want to go into Ruby? Yeah, that old new team is too slow for you. And, sure, Major says, well, your daddy, he got in the sled and put Major on the handlebars and away they went.
Away they went.
He got him in, and When I got in the room, they got him up for crazy, didn't they?
Yeah.
He was crazy. Well, you know, he was prospecting on a creek over there close to Stratton, and that was just about 8 miles from Fairman. And he come over to Spruce, and old Jack Shuster, Louis Flowers, and they were had him there, and they had him in his crazy stand, you know. They
mm-hmm.
they told me to try to get him to go. Well, the only way I got him to go, he said, it's pretty cold. And old Jack Shuster gave me a Big Mac, you know. And I told him, first photo, how you can do the driving, I'll wear this Big Mac and all. Old Jack Shuster had a big head and that, you know. Sit on over my toe, you know. It was all I wanted. And I said, you do the driving. And he drove back to the 14 mile. He can drive that. But that, apparently they told me, not let on the crazy. He was not that crazy. He was sending, he had, sure that he could send word after during the World War One, or right after World War One, you know. And he was sending messages to the air over there from Spruce. He was an alarm clock.
Well, at the top of every hill, he'd send a message.
Right?
At the top of every hill, he'd have my dad stop and send a message.
Yeah.
To the president. Mm-hmm.